You are listening to BensTorah.com.
We're going to talk about a somewhat painful Shaila, but an interesting one. It's certainly contemporary. It's certainly controversial. And that's the question of Mesira, of calling the authorities, calling the police, calling Child Protective Services in a situation where somebody is in a potential danger, be that a child who is potentially being abused by a parent, be that a child who is potentially being abused in other ways, in more inappropriate ways, and be it a question of a case where a person is a reckless driver, and all such situations. And we're going to start with something a little bit more innocuous, and then we'll get to things that are a little bit more difficult and painful to address. Yeah, last time we spoke about Mesira, we pointed out that the Shulchan Aruch tells us that even though it's absolutely prohibited to call the police on somebody or to turn somebody over to the authorities, we're going to find a number of perspectives on the concept of calling the authorities and calling the authorities in a situation of modern-day governments, and also in terms of calling on the authorities if it's endangering to somebody else, if it's not endangering somebody else. And let's begin with what the Shulchan Aruch says as follows. Says the Shulchan Aruch, and again, this is an interesting topic. This is the area of halacha. It's called, it's one siman long, Shin Pei Ches and Chashon Mishpat, but it's called Hilchos Ma'abed Mamar Chaveiro. You're causing a loss to your friend, the Adayim, and most of the Malshin, you're an informer. The halacha is of an informer, of what it means to be an informer against a fellow Jew. And of course, the halacha generally is you're not allowed to inform a fellow Jew. Except, says the Ramah, and it says the Shulchan Aruch, Kol HaMoser Tzibur U'Mitzaron, somebody who is an informer against the community, or causes their pain, Mutter L'Matzo B'Yad Ovni Kachama Natal HaKotel Oso Knoto. If somebody is doing things that are painful to a community, he's a problem maker in the Jewish community, he causes problem, he causes tzaret. In such a case, with not just individual things, not just I have a gripe against somebody, but he's causing tzar to the community, then you're allowed to hand him to the Goyim, you're allowed to hand it to the secular authorities, even if, in the words of the Shulchan Aruch, are quite strong. La hakoso ul otro ul knoto. Even if they're going to beat him or they'll put him in jail, obviously we don't have beating in our law system. We have malchus, but we don't have given malchus in many generations. Ul otro, jail, we don't really have jail in our system of in our penal system. Nevertheless, even if that will be the case, if somebody is a nudnik, more than a nudnik, somebody that causes tzar to the community, one can turn him over. Now we're going to have something that, again, we mentioned very quickly last week. Somebody's involved with counterfeiting, and you have to see what the Ramah's concern with counterfeiting was. There are two potential concerns with counterfeiting. Number one is that if somebody's counterfeiting, that means he's going to be passing fake money into the market, and he's going to be flooding, you know, he's going to go to all the Jewish stores, well, all the stores, especially the Jewish stores, with fake money and stealing from them. But there might be something much more significant about counterfeiting, and that is that the government really, really, really doesn't like counterfeiting. I'll just tell you something that's an interesting fact. Do you know that in the United States of America, there's a body called the Secret Service? You know what the Secret Service responsibilities are? As far as I understand, they have two primary goals. Now it's three, but originally there were two things. They're in charge of protecting the president and the vice president, and they're in charge of battling counterfeit money.
Originally a branch of the Treasury Department, for that reason.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So that's the job of the Secret Service. So you see that the government takes counterfeit money very seriously. So aside from the fact that we're scared that fake money is going to come into our storekeepers' cash registers, there's a bigger overarching concern that if the government finds out that one of the Jews is counterfeiting, they might think that there's a ring, that there's a counterfeit ring, that there's money laundering ring, that there's a whole bunch of Jews in on it, and they might come very harshly down on the Jewish community. And therefore, that I might add, if somebody is involved with the UFIM, counterfeiting money, and therefore we're concerned that could cause a hezek to rabbim, and again, just present two ways you could read. What do you mean that it's damaging to the community? So we have to warn him, says the Ramah, and if he refuses to listen to our warnings, then we are allowed to turn him over to the authorities, as long as we tell him that this is the only guy who's doing it, everybody else is not involved, this is the guy who's here's your guy, here's the guy who's pushing the fake money, and he's the only one, so leave the rest of us alone. Fine. So that being the case, where did we see that was one point that we saw that if somebody's causing a tzar to the rabbim, you're allowed to turn him in. And the other point that we saw last week was very strong case of two stories of certain tannaim who were in charge of turning over Jews to the Roman authorities, even if the Roman authorities would kill the Jews, the Jewish perpetrators, like for theft or for stealing. And we saw last week that it was permitted, according to Shana, was permitted, because that was the law of the land. And it seems that if it's the law of the land, then it's permitted, even if a Jew is going to turn them over, even if it's way beyond anything that Jewish law would have, meaning to, we don't have anything, we don't kill thieves, we don't kill Ganavim or Gazlanim, we punish them a little bit, we don't kill them, but the Romans would kill them, and still the Gemara seems to say it was permitted to Rav Shimon bar Yochai's son, was one of the people who did this, to turn over those Ganavim to the Roman authorities, even though the Jews would be killed by the Roman authorities. And with those two things in the background, now let's zoom ahead to deal with what the contemporary poskim address regarding questions of Mesira. So here you have a question that came from Baltimore to Moshe Feinstein, and it was addressed to the Vad HaRabbanim, the Baltimore. That's known as Baltimore. Maybe it's because at the end of the word Baltimore, there's an E. He calls it Baltimore. But okay. So the question that the Ivan Harabon of Baltimore asked is that there was a kosher, we mentioned the question last week, but we didn't get into his answer. Ramosh was asked that you had a kosher butcher, a kosher meat packing plant, where somebody was putting stemples and putting supervision stamps on trace meat. And he was selling it as kosher meat. How should we deal with that? Could we turn him into authorities who would probably throw such a person in jail? Look what Ramosh responds. So he says, I don't think you could throw him to jail. I don't think you could turn him over to the authorities for two separate reasons. Lanius Daisy says Ramosh, it's a terrible thing. And says Ramosh, it seems like he's not a Baal Tshuva. It seems like he's not, penitent about his deeds. Nevertheless, as long as, Ramosh says, it's still possible that the Jewish courts could adjudicate such a case, you have to keep it within the community. You can't send it to court. Why? Two reasons. Number one, we know that there's a halacha that you can't go to secular courts. If you have a case between a Jew and a fellow Jew, it's usher to go to Eretz Yisrael. And even if the Eretz Yisrael would judge, according to Jewish law, it would still be usher to go to a secular court. It's a deraisa of Eilam Mishpatim Asher Tefim Lefneihem. We learn that these are the laws that you should put Lefneihem in front of the Jewish courts, below Lefnei of the Avodah Zarah. Now let her bring a court case to the secular court. I know you don't see me for a minute, but I should come back in just a moment. That's one reason why Moshe Feinstein said you can't take this to court. Because of a general problem, nothing to do with Mesira, but a general problem of Eretz Yisrael of going to a secular court. And then he said something interesting. He says, and the reason why I'm drawing your eye to this is because we're not going to see too many people say this. And it seems to be against the Gemara that we saw before. Remember we saw the Gemara just a minute ago? I told you the Gemara a minute ago, the story with Rav Shimon bar Yochai's son, who had turned the thieves over to the Roman government, even though the Romans would kill thieves, and it sounded from the Gemara that it was okay? Says the Moshe Feinstein, no. You can't turn this guy over to the authorities who's passing on stamping the things with kosher, because you know what they'll probably do? The government will probably put him in jail, which is more than what Jewish law would do. And therefore, that's considered a mesira. If you hand a Jew over to a government where they would what the Jewish courts would do, that is a violation of mesira. And we don't put a guy in jail. We'll fine him. We'll be angry at him. We won't give him shlishi. We won't give him, we won't let him down in our shul. We're not going to put him in jail in Jewish law. And therefore, Ramosha Feinstein said, you cannot turn this guy into the authorities. Rather, what do you have to do? You have to try to stop him, of course. Then you have to warn him. And you have to warn him that you might take him to court. And if after all that, you'll be able to, if you do all those things, you warn him and you tell him you're going to do this and you're going to stop, we're going to take you to court. If he still does it then, only then will you be able to take him to court, because it's no worse than somebody who's a continual thief, who's trying to continually steal more and you're stopping him from stealing more. Well, somebody who will steal more is no different than a guy who's going to pass on trace meat as kosher meat and bring that into the flood of the market with trace meat, the kosher market trace meat. It's no worse than somebody who's going to continue to steal, and if somebody's going to continue to steal, that person you'd be able to, again, after warning, then only then would you be able to bring him to call the authorities. But other than that, you can't really do it. So Moshe seems to be pretty machmir in the halakha of Mitzvah. You can't really turn people into the court, which is interesting, because didn't we have a Gemara that said pretty clearly that you can turn somebody into the Gentile courts, even if the courts rule much more stringently than Jewish law? If in secular law, they kill a thief, the Gemara told us the story that we had of Rav Shimon bar Yochai's son, that he was turning Jewish thieves to the Romans to be killed. And here Moshe says, sorry, you can't turn a guy a Jew in if the guy, if the secular authorities will do more than what the Torah would punish somebody. How does that fit with the Gemara that we mentioned? Okay, keep that question in mind, because there's another Tshuva of Moshe, which is different but similar, and in that second Tshuva, he does address our question, with which we'll be able to understand this first Tshuva that Moshe was at. So let's move from Baltimore, look at the next story. I have to share you on this, you lost the document, let me show you on this document again. Oh, here we go. So we have another Tshuva of Moshe. This is a Tshuva of Moshe, or a Chaim Chel case, in the past. And here we have a very interesting case. Here's the case that there's a Jew who knew the combination lock to the safe in the shul. Right? Because who else would know the combination lock to the safe in the shul? And who else knows the value of the Sefer Torah and the Ketzef that goes on the Sefer Torah? And you have a Jew who unfortunately stole the Sefer Torah and clicked Ketzef from the Sefer Torah from the shul. I said it wrong. Let's talk about the second story that Moshe was asked. And this is a case where a thief stole a Jewish thief stole Sifrei Torah from a shul. How terrible that is. Could you call the police? And you know that somebody who does that could theoretically be thrown into jail as a thief. That's the question. So again, Ramosha says, L'chore Pashat Sh'ein Shaykh L'hatir. You're not allowed to call the police in this case. Why? And he says, first of all, you can't go to the secular courts, as he mentioned earlier. And he says, furthermore, what would the Jew do if a Jewish court would find somebody guilty of stealing? Well, they'd make him pay. That's all he would do. We don't have jail. We don't have jail term. However, the Gentile authorities, the state government or the federal government have the concept of Jabahim, Donabi Surim, Shizelochiva Torah. And therefore, we can't adjudicate, we can't punish somebody more than the Torah would require them to be punished. I'm just adjusting the height of my computer. There we go. A little bit better. And therefore, we can't cause somebody to be punished more than the Torah would punish them, and therefore you can't put them into, you can't call the people, you can't call the authorities and put them in jail. Ah, he asked through Moshe, what about, did the Rama tell us, do you remember the story that the Rama tells us that somebody was pushing counterfeit money, we were allowed to call the police? The Rama said, you are allowed to. He says, no, that's only where you're going to be protecting the rest of the Jews, so that the rest of the Jews are not accused of being counterfeiters also. That's the only time where you have the heter of in reporting a counterfeiter. Not just because you couldn't report counterfeiters. If it's to protect the rest of the Jews who won't be accused of counterfeiting, that's the only time that you're allowed to report a counterfeiter. Oh, and this last line is the most important one. But wait a second. Didn't we see, the Gemara told us, again, that we heard the story inside last week, but we saw the story last week, and I repeated it again today at least once or twice, that Rav Shimon bar Yochai's son worked for the Roman government to turn in thieves to be killed by the Roman government. So you see that you can turn in, and we have two Gemaras like that. We say you can turn in a Jew to be punished even with a worse punishment than that which the Torah punishes a person, a criminal. And how could Moshe be saying in both of these Jews, no, you can't, God forbid, send him, call the police, send him to jail, which is more than we would ever do in our system. Ah, that's Moshe Feinstein. I'll tell you how he answered that question. Those stories, because that case was different, because if you remember carefully, if you remember when we told you the stories last week, it was that these people, Rav Elazar, Rav Shimon bar Yochai's son, was actually appointed by the government to catch the thieves. He was a government employee. Since he was a government employee, that's why, as a government employee to catch thieves, he was able to turn the thieves, the Jewish thieves, over to the Roman government, even if the Roman government would kill somebody. So what Rav Moshe Feinstein is doing, he's going against everything we said until now for the past week and a half. Everything we said until now, there were the explicit Gemaras that seem to say that a Jew can turn a fellow Jew into the government, even if the government will do worse than the Jews would otherwise judge somebody, because that's the law, and the government have the right to enact laws. So Rav Moshe, no, that's an exception. That's only because of those specific stories happen to have a prat where those two Tanoim were public employees, were employees of the Roman government, and that's why they were able to turn the fellow Jews over. But otherwise, it would be absolutely prohibited. That is Rav Moshe's chumrah when it comes to Mesira. And that's how he learns these Gemaras. Now, I'll have you know that this is not the simple reading of the way the Rishonim learned the Gemaras. The Rishonim learned the Gemaras. He says, Rav Moshe doesn't have a Beis Yosef who's mashma that way also. But the Rishonim, who we saw last week, said explicitly that you see from these stories that you're allowed to turn a Jew over even when they'll be punished more severely than Jewish courts. But Rav Moshe says, no, those stories were limited because you can't learn from those stories because those were cases where a person was indeed an employee of the government. Oh, so you see from this that if you'd be hired as an ADA or if you'd be hired as a public prosecutor or something like that, then maybe you would be able to, you would be able to work against a fellow Jew, even to push the death penalty or to push jail time on a fellow Jew if you work for the government. But if you don't work for the government, you have no right to report to the government if the government would judge a person more than the Torah would require. Now, again, that's Rav Moshe Feinstein's sheet. We're going to see that it's certainly not like some of the Rishonim we saw last week. We're going to see some others who argue on him. And interestingly enough, Rav Moshe, the next Jew, has actually talked about somebody who does work for the government, and you're going to see what his interesting perspective, where there's a little bit of an exception for somebody who wanted to be hired by the IRS. Now, the question that Moshe was asked is, could somebody work as an accountant or a forensic accountant for the IRS as an auditor? Could he be an auditor for the IRS? And what's going to happen if you're an auditor? You're going to audit some, a Jonathan Goldberg with some really Jewish name, where you know he's Jewish, and you're going to be auditing him or her. And what's going to happen sometimes when you audit somebody, you're going to find that they messed up, and they might have to be punished more than they would be punished according to Allah. They might have to be thrown to jail. So could somebody take that position? Now, based on what we said, Ramosha's position, as we've been learning, is that no, unless you're, maybe you're a government employee. No, but you're not an employee yet. You want to take the job. You don't have to become an employee. The story that we learned last week, the government said, Rav Shimon bar Yochai, we want you to work in this job. We said you're a gifted prosecutor. We want you to become to catch the Jewish thieves. Well, here's a guy who's saying, I'm applying for jobs. Could I apply to be an auditor for the IRS? Look at what Rav Moshe says. Rav Moshe says an interesting part. He says, you're not going to do anything special. If you're an auditor, you're just going to crunch the numbers. If the numbers don't work out, you're going to find that the person you're auditing messed up and therefore has to go to jail. And even if you wouldn't be there, well, somebody else would do the same auditing that you're doing. Somebody else would be doing that auditing. So therefore, you're not causing a loss or a punishment to this Jew any different than if somebody else would be there. And therefore, says Rav Moshe, the victim of your audit, we'll call him the non-taxpayer citizen, is not going to lose any more by you being in that position or by anyone else being in that same position that the IRS needs to fill. And therefore, you're not doing any additional headache. and concludes with Moshe, if you're not mazik somebody, if you're not going to cause them to be damaged, that's not an isser of mesira. There's no isser of mesira if you're not causing damage to somebody. Now,
what is of that nature are usually just financial, not jail time.
Okay, but it could be that it would involve a penalty that would be more than the actual money that you owe. Let's say they find that a guy owes $10,000.
Well, there's interest and penalties.
Right, so that penalty might be more than the Torah law would require. If you have to pay $10,000, the Torah law might say, okay, pay $10,000. Now we're going to make him pay $10,000 plus the penalty. I don't know what the numbers for penalties are. I guess it might depend if it's willful or not willful, but that might be more than the Torah would allow, and therefore we might not, that, similar to Moshe would say, theoretically could be a problem, except for the fact that somebody else would do your job anyway. So it's mutter. And I know, Mr. Krinkles, you did have a position something like this, and you see it is mutter in Moshe Feinstein's eyes. Okay. So that was Moshe Feinstein's approach to Mesira. In general, he seems to be on the Machmir end of things. Machmir in the sense of you're not allowed to turn somebody into the authorities unless if their punishment system, their penal code, is more severe than what the way we would punish somebody. Now, let's get into what I think is the dicier and juicier part of the shiur, and that's what happens if you have somebody who is a little bit of a threat. And we're going to see some interesting applications of the halachas of Mesira, and let's start with child abuse. Now, before we get into child abuse, I want to sort of understand the nature of our government. What I mean by that is that for much of history, there were despotic, tyrannical monarchies, or even not monarchies, where you had a king who ran a government that was completely corrupt and completely self-centered, and there was no concept of justice or freedom or democracy. I mean, Napoleon brought in the idea of, you know, for liberté, fraternité, and what's the third? Égalité. So before that, and if you weren't in Napoleonic countries, then you know, there was whatever the king wanted, whatever the bishop wanted in a given city, he would just decide however he wanted. And if he didn't like it, you were dead. So how do we look at different governments? So I want to share with you a fascinating Aruch HaShulchan. When I say fascinating, it's fascinating from a historical perspective, not so much from a halakhic perspective. Look how he writes about the concept of when you're allowed to do Mesira and when you're not allowed to do Mesira. Now, he's trying to explain in general. We know that you're not allowed to turn somebody into the fellow Jew into the secular authorities. That's Mesira in general. Again, we're talking about the details of Mesira, but in general, there's an issue of Mesira of turning somebody to the secular authorities that theoretically, at some, as the Gemara says, was a problem, fundamentally. We saw all kinds of exceptions. If the person is endangering others, if the person is working for the government, if the person is doing what the authorities would allow to be done, their own authorities allowed to kill thieves. But in general, Mesira, turning somebody to the secular authorities, is halachically problematic. Look what the Aruch HaShulchan writes. He says, anybody who studies history knows, many years ago, many generations ago, I don't know, but I think the Aruch HaShulchan lived in Russia, and you'll see why. Many years ago, in faraway lands, nobody really was safe. People weren't safe. Because there were all kinds of bandits and attackers, and even people who had the name of the government on their shoulders, who had some kind of royal position, they were still dishonest. And that you could find somewhere in Africa, maybe, where even the government officials are corrupt. But here, our dear Caesar, our dear Tsar, the Kira Mirusia, the Russian Tsar, and the Russian Tsar's predecessors, his father, the previous Tsars, and look what he does. And the kings of England, these types of people are so appropriate, they spread out the wings of their government. Lemania said everybody should be protected, their wealth and their body should be protected. Lemania called Ishu, you should be talking about Gufa Mamono. Both in such a way that nobody has to be scared, nobody has to hide their wealth. Can I ask you a question? He's in Russia, and he's talking about those terrible corrupt governments in Africa. But people like where we live in Russia and in England, why is he talking about England? Russia is not adjacent to England, the last time I looked at a map. So you'll see what some of the Achronim say. The Achronim say that maybe this is all a cop-out. He's really trying to tell you that, of course, Russia under the Tsar was terribly unjust and was unfair and was terrible to be a Jew under the Tsar's rule. And that's why he had to tell you, Africa is terrible, but the Tsar is wonderful, the Russian Tsar is terrific. And Britain, England, that's where they have a normal legal system, that's where they have a normal government, where people are protected, where human rights are protected. And there, of course, there you'd be able to do Mesira, in a place like England, where there's a just government. And of course, here in Russia with our wonderful Tsar. So you see from the fact that I think the Tzitzel Yehuda makes this point, this unusual point, because we always have to be careful when we read these kinds of material from that are written in different countries where you know that the countries would have a heavy hand in the censoring and you couldn't really write anything negative about the government. So, of course, they had to weasel their way around. You never know if they mean it or not. But what the Aruch HaShulchan seems to be saying is that if you have a just government that's fair and that protects human rights and that protects human property and is equal in its application of law and is not prejudiced against Jews or any other minority or any other type of people, it seems that one would be able to do mesira in such a case. You're allowed to inform the government. It's just the unfair government. That's where it's usur, like in Africa, or maybe he meant in Russian, in Tsarist Russia. So that's just a background, a little bit about how to look at government. So it sounds like Aruch HaShulchan is taking the whole sugya out of the Gemara and crossing out that line of the Gemara. The Gemara said that there's a promise here. Says Aruch HaShulchan, that's only for unfair, unreliable, corrupt governments where there's no proper due process and they do things unfairly. That's where you can't turn somebody into the government. But if there were to be a fair government like England, Tsarist Russia, we could argue about what did he mean. But certainly like England, he said there you would be permitted to turn somebody into the government in such a case. Okay. That's the position of Aruch HaShulchan. Now, let's get into a very specific application of child abuse. Now, the Tzitz Eliezer, as we know, was the Posik Ashai Tzedek Hospital. And he wrote hundreds of tshuvas, 20 volumes of the Tzitz Eliezer. Just so you know, for your own edification, the present Posik Ashai Tzedek Hospital is Rav Asher Weiss, of course, who spoke in our shul, I believe, last year, 2 years ago, he spoke in our shul. And amidst the corona crisis, he's been one of the very prolific poskim in Eretz Yisrael. Now, the Tzitz Eliezer, I think I mentioned this, but I heard from Professor Steinberg, but the way he used to pass Shilas is like this. He would daven mincha in the Shai Tzedek Hospital, not where it's located now, but Shai Tzedek Hospital used to be located on Rehov Yafo, opposite the new Tachana Merkazit, across the street, a little bit coming out of Tachana Merkazit, a little across the street, Rehov Yafo, and a little bit down to the left was the old Shai Tzedek Hospital. He would daven mincha there, and the front doctors would go to that mincha, and anyone who had a Shilas would go to him at mincha with Shachrit to daven at that minyan, and present the Shilas to the Tzitz Eliezer, and that afternoon at mincha, they'd come back again, and the Tzitz Eliezer would have 20 handwritten pages with his tshuva to the shilas that the doctors asked. That's how it worked in the Shai Tzedek Hospital. So here you have a question that was asked by Avraham Sofer Avraham, who's the author of the Sefer Nishmas Avraham, and he includes much of the Tzitz Eliezer's answers in his own Sefer, which is the Nishmas Avraham, which is an encyclopedia of halacha, of medical halacha. But let's see the shilas that Dr. Abraham asked the Tzitz Eliezer. Question number one, what happens if you have a doctor who sees that a child was abused? He has all the bruises and all the markings of a child who's abused. And the question is, if he informs the authorities very well might take this child out of the father's, the family's domain and give them over to another family, a foster family, and that foster family might not be religious or might not even be Jewish if this happens in Chutzlar. Can the doctor tell? Question number two, terrible case. What happens if it comes to the doctor's knowledge that a little girl is being raped by her father? And again, same thing, because the police be informed, or the authorities, the Child Protective Services, be informed of such a case. And number three, also terrible, all these are terrible, they're all terrible. If there's a case of a teacher who is a pedophile, there's some kind of inappropriate touching that he's involved with with young children, whether they're boys or girls, that's irrelevant. So this is certainly a terrible physical as well as an emotional toll. In such cases, is one permitted to call the authorities? That was the truth. Now, the Tzitz Eliezer does a very smart thing. And he takes each of the three sections and deals with each one separately and comes out with very important conclusions. Now, so the first question was a person who is a child abuser. Now, not every parent who happens to slap a child is a child abuser. Now, it could be in, America 2020 that is the case, but I'm sure when you grew up, that was not the case. So there's been a little bit of a shift in what was expected or what is allowed for parents to do. So look what he says. He says, if you know that this kid is going to go back home and his parents are going to continue to beat him to a point that it might reach death, then you can tell the authorities. But look what he says why. He says, what are you doing? All you're doing is telling the authorities that something happened to save the kid's life, right? What will the authorities do? The authorities will do whatever they are going to do, which includes maybe taking this child out of a religious home and putting him in a non-kosher and a non-Jewish home. But what's your role in this? You are trying to save a child. Child's life, and you're only a go-rein. You're only the one cog in the wheel. You're starting the turning of the wheel. You're starting the turning of the gears. You're reporting. The government will do its investigation. The government will take the kid away. The government will be putting him into a non-kosher home. That's point A. So you're just doing a grumma in terms of causing the kid to be taken from a Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Kashrus home. Number B, there's a halacha called Lifnei Iver. How can I cause this Jewish boy, a Jewish girl, to be taken out of their home and be sent to a non-kosher environment or a non-Shomer Shabbos environment? There's a halacha in Lifnei Iver. The halacha in Lifnei Iver, we learn from the Gemara Avodah Zarah, tells us the following, that you're not allowed to sell incense to an Ovid Avodah Zarah to use in their services. But you can do? You could be, and I had a shayla like this in our shul. This shayla came up. You could be a supplier, a wholesaler. You could sell incense wholesale to an Avodah Zarah wholesale supply store. Why? Because the prohibition of Lifnei Iver is only if you are Lifnei Iver, and not Lifnei to Lifnei. That's what the Mishnah actually says. Mishnah Avodah Zarah says that if you're lifnig lifnig, you're two steps removed from the violation, meaning I sell to a supplier. The supplier sells to the Oved Avodah Zarah customer who's going to do the Isra of Avodah Zarah. So I'm two steps away. My lifnig lifnig is providing the good to somebody else who provides the good to the guy who does the Avodah Zarah. Similarly, that's exactly what's happening here, says the Tzitzel Yadzer. I'm telling the police. The police are telling the, or I'm telling, Child Protective Services. They are going to go ahead and do whatever they're going to do. And that's going to be two steps removed. That's not a violation of Lifnei Iver. And therefore, certainly where there's a child's life at stake, I have no problem with Lifnei Iver to cause this child to be, God forbid, possibly taken from a Torah home. Of course, you have to do whatever you can to see that there could be an Orthodox foster home if possible. That's what he says. However, if it's just a question that, you know, the kid gets beaten a little bit and you don't like the kid get beaten, that's not so simple, says the Tzitzel Yadzer. I don't know if you have the right to, if it's just sort of a, you know, you don't like the way the kid's being treated, you don't like the fact that his father is more, you know, physical than you would ever be with your children. So is that a reason to allow a child to be taken out of a Orthodox home? That the Tzitzel Yadzer said is not so clear. Okay, that's question number one. Question number two that the Tzitzel Yadzer was asked was, what happens if you have, God forbid, a father who, or an older brother, God forbid, or whoever it is, who rapes his daughter, or sister, be the same halacha. So he says, number one, we know the Gemara tells us very clearly. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that rodef achar ha'erva, dino ke rodef achar chavero. If I see somebody running after another person with a knife, with a gun, what could I do to the rodef? I could pull out my gun and shoot the rodef before he shoots the victim, or before he stabs the victim, of course. Well, the Mishnah says explicitly in Sanhedrin that you could do the same thing if you see somebody who's pursuing an erva, like his daughter, like his younger sister, or whatever else that would be. That's somebody who's attacking, who's trying to rape an erva. In that case, it's mutter to kill the attacker. Certainly, to call the police. That's a no-brainer. And that's all, the way the Gemara presents that, all to do what? To protect that violator, to protect that sinner from doing a sin. You're killing him. You're allowed to kill him to not, so he shouldn't do the sin. Certainly here, where you want to prevent him not only from sinning, but also prevent, God forbid, this child from being attacked, which is a different concern. Remember, there's two things. It's preventing the sinner from doing the terrible sin, and it also protects the child from being damaged, from being injured both emotionally as well as physically, which is also a reason to be able to call the police. And especially the Shach Ed, we see that you're permitted, if somebody's being hit, consistently beaten up, you're allowed to call the police to prevent being beaten up. Well, somebody who's being attacked in this kind of pedophilic type of attack certainly is no less bad than being hit. It's worse than being hit. And therefore, even though they're being emotionally hit, that is certainly equally or even worse than being hit, and therefore be permitted, no problem, no questions, to definitely call the authorities in that case. That's only, though, we mentioned, in a case where the person is being, where the attacker is attacking somebody who there might be an Isra Arayos for them to attack. What happens if it's just a teacher who's doing some other type of inappropriate activities with the children in the kindergarten, which Ladavaneo, such a thing does happen, where there might not be the situation, rodev et ha'erva, that carries the weight of the Mishnah where you like kill the person. So it says the Tzitzel Yadzer, same conclusion. Even when it comes to a person who's dealing inappropriately with children in a nursery or the like in younger grades, mutu l'moso, again, he's somebody who's meitzar et ha'rabim. He's endangering the community, and it would be permitted to, of course, call the authorities in such a case. And now he makes the point, we don't have to say it again, but he makes the point of the Aruch HaShulchan, who distinguishes between different kinds of government. And he says that it depends really on the types of government, that it could be that if you're in a case where you're in a fair government, then it's a little bit easier to have a case of reporting to the authorities. Okay? That is the Tzitzel Yadzer, who again was answering the questions that were asked him by Dr. Abraham. Now, let's look at what he records in his Sefer, Dr. Abraham, in his Sefer, Nishmas Avraham. And he brings, not just the Tzitzel Yadzer, but he brings some Pesukim from Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yoshev as well. If you read the description, it's a little bit, you know, it's very frightening, to be honest. A child comes into the hospital with broken bones and internal bleeding and because of hits or kicks and burns, either from boiling water or from electricity or from cigarettes. And you see that, unfortunately, such things do make their way to our emergency rooms, Rahman al-Islam. So, of course, he quotes, he says that you're allowed to call the police and to take such a child away from the parents, even if that child will be taken away from an Orthodox home. And Rav Shlomo Zalman agreed with me. And Rav Yoshev said also that you're allowed to do this even in Chutzlaretz, where again, in Chutzlaretz, the chance of the child going to a non-Jewish family is much, much higher. If Child Protective Services, in New York, we have things like OHEL and, large human resource organizations, social service organizations. But out of New York, we don't have such a gigantic mammoth like OHEL and things like that. If you're in some other city where they don't have that kind of network, there's a very reasonable chance that if a child is taken from an Orthodox home and then you have to find a foster parent, the vast population of foster parents available are not going to be Torah homes. Nevertheless, we also said still it would be permitted in such a case. Similarly, he quotes Ushul Zaman also, who adds a very interesting thing. If a person is being raped, and again, a father is raping a daughter or something that, in a regular fashion, and we know that they're a victim of such kind of abuse, so Shlomo Zalman makes a very important point. In fact, it's such an important point that you don't have to be Shlomo Zalman to make it. It's an explicit pasuk in the Torah. When the Torah describes the case of Ones, of a Ma'anet, of a rapist, the Torah has a very unusual term which the Gemara in Sanhedrin picks up. Look what I highlighted. The Torah says that if somebody is a victim of rape, of an attack, we view the victim as, again, if you have the Muslim, again, I'm not an expert in Islam, but I understand, Islam sometimes or might see the victim as responsible if she was raped, the victim herself. Look at what the pasuk says, a contradistinction to that perverted perspective. How do we look at somebody who's in a victim of an attack? Zok the pasuk in Dvarim, I think. Kasher or Mishpatim, maybe, I don't remember. Kasher yokum ishel arayel or tzachon nefesh. Just as, this is talking about a victim being raped, just as a person stands up to kill a fellow human being, so too is this case of the victim being raped. In other words, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, this is considered in our eyes as murder if somebody's being raped. The Torah says that explicitly. And therefore, to prevent a murder, of course, you could call the authority, certainly in this case, to prevent a future, God forbid, circumstance with a father or brother or a sibling might be raping somebody, that would equally be permitted to call the authority. And again, the same points are repeated regarding the case if you have a teacher. Similarly, it's equally appropriate to call the authorities. Let's finish off. I know it's 9 o'clock and we're going to have Marv in a moment, but let's finish off with a very interesting question. And that's the question of your next door neighbor who drives like whatever. We see too many people driving with their cell phone and driving very quickly and not stopping at stop signs. And people are reckless drivers. So if you know somebody who's a reckless driver, they might be a wonderful friend of yours. They might daven in the same minute that you're davening, but they're reckless drivers. Can you call the police? Okay, so what's the definition of reckless? I'm not going to give an easy definition, but somebody who would we call a reckless driver. So this is a tshuva from Rav Moshe Sternbach. Again, Rav Moshe Sternbach Shlita is living in Israel. I think I told you the story that Rav Moshe Sternbach, of course, was the postdoc for the South African Jewish community. He's there for part of the year. I don't know if he still goes. And he's on the Badatz, in the Badatz Yerushalayim. For the other part of the year, I think he's a Ravid. He's an Avbezman, a Badatz. So he has a shul called Pnei Fanny something. I forgot what it's called, in Yerushalayim, in Harnof. And I was learning the Beit Medrash, and the great Moshe Sternbach walked into the Beit Medrash, into his own Beit Medrash. I was learning on a Shabbos afternoon. I was in Harnof for Shabbos. And I figured I'd have the opportunity to talk to Moshe Sternbach. So I approached, I think the Chaz, I told you this story once. So I approached the, from the Gedolei Hador, and I started in my broken Hebrew, asking whatever Shaila had, I made it up or I didn't make it up, I started asking whatever Shaila had in my broken Hebrew. As I'm stuttering over my Hebrew, which is not terrible, he looks up at me and says, I think that my English is probably a lot better than your Hebrew. Why don't you just ask me in English? So that was my experience with Moshe Sternbach. Yes, his English was a lot better than my broken Hebrew. So he was asked, what do you do with somebody who's a reckless driver? Look what he says. He says a fascinating halacha, and then he says an even more fascinating story. He quotes the halacha that we saw about somebody who is a counterfeiter. And we saw that Ramah told us that somebody who counterfeits money is considered someone who endangers the rest of the Jewish community. And we saw last week the halacha that even if it's unintentional, even if you're not intending to hurt other people, if you are ultimately hurting other people or endangering other people, that is considered you're a rodef. And says, somebody who is a reckless driver, the mehirus refers to speed terribly, or without knowing how to drive properly, you don't have anything more dangerous than that. Or maybe someone doesn't have a license for that reason, or someone whose license was rescinded for that reason, they could chas v'shalom, they could kill people, and they have a rodef. And therefore, if such a person, if you know that they are, if that somebody is reckless in that way, you have the responsibility to call the authorities to prevent them from driving recklessly. Now look what he says. He does point out, I'm sorry, look what he says, I have to add this line. He says, Amnam kitai lo lemosu miyad. You should first try to warn him with the rabbi, go with the rabbi of the city, and say, you know, I see that you're driving recklessly, you have to change the way you're driving, get off the car, otherwise we're going to have to call the police. But otherwise, you have there's nothing else, but you have to turn that person in. Now look at the story that he quotes. It's a great story. He tells the story about the stipler. He says the stipler in general didn't like people, was very unhappy when people did not follow the laws of driving laws and moving violations. Look at the story. The story was a stipler. Somebody had some terrible driving violations. Had to go to court because of terrible driving violations, driving recklessly, speeding, whatever it was. So he went to the stipler to get a bracha that he would be found acquitted, that he'd be found innocent in traffic court. don't know, traffic court or whatever, and the sniper would get very angry with him and said, you deserve to be punished. You deserve to be punished if you're driving like that. Absolutely not. Not when you're a bluff, you should be innocent. You are guilty. So that's just an interesting story from the sniper. Maybe, I don't think we have time right now, but there is a very important question about how to look at jails in modern jails. Are modern jails the same type of jails that they were once before? Maybe they're different types of jails, and that's something that I don't think we have time for right now. So we'll end this issue here. So halacha l'maisa, you have to discuss it with the rav. In many cases, of course, if it's a case of pedophilia, rape, God forbid, or all those kinds of things, it is mutter. But it's always smart to talk these things over with somebody who's holding in the sugya, because their details are very specific, and you have to be certain that it's happening, and you have to perhaps warn the person first. But other than that, if necessary, we see that there are numerous situations where a person would be able to inform authorities, certainly to protect people from being hurt going forward. We should be zocheh to not have such situations, and Klal Yisrael should be safe, the whole world should be safe.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.